Hello, we're back for another episode, I think 139. Is that right?
Yes, it is.
139. Yes, sir. I think tonight we agreed to talk about protesting, its efficacy, what it means, but you wanted to briefly talk about the latest developments in this coronavirus.
Yes, indeed. Let's see. Last week was Dresden, and of course this week the imminent destruction of mankind by a virus. I was thinking, it's like powers and principalities is your weekly kind of Zen moment, of like tranquility and lambs jumping over fences, and it's just so peaceful and relaxing. I mean, just one horror show after another, you have the coronavirus, and it appears to me that it's going to be popping up in the U.S. next week, at the very latest the week after, and I think you could have the potentials are for really draconian setup. What really got me kind of thinking about it and why I contacted you about this is that I have a friend who is in the anti-vax kind of structure, and she sent me I won't name her, but this woman is just an absolute hero. And she sent me a video of Senator Cotton, I believe his name is.
Tom Cotton.
Yeah, Tom Cotton, the insane neocon, and he was addressing the generals. They had like 20 generals, and each one of them had more braid and epaulets. It looked like a convention of South American dictators. There was just a dozen of them, and they were just all these heroic medals all over the place. And he was talking to them, and he goes, we just have to be prepared to act, and we're really going to get this vaccine out quickly. And you could see he was pretty clear, because he had talked earlier about, the generals had different areas of martial control around the world, by the way. He was just saying, in your area, how are you ready for the virus? And then he was saying, well, here, we're going to have to act quickly. And it was, I just caught the sense that this was sort of prep for a kind of military occupation of the U.S. and the potential for mandatory vaccinations once they got the whiz-bang technology built. And I just wanted to mention how dangerous this is. We've talked, and my position, Tim, that in general, I am worried and believe that vaccinations are one of the ways that they're creating the Delta and Epsilon classes. They these things can dumb us down. And I just wanted to point out that at no time in the history of vaccination should they ever be permitted by the citizen without informed consent. Because this is your body, it's your flesh and blood, and the government from time to time has been possessed by evil, right? We know this, it's self-evident. And so you can't just give up the inside of your body to the government, because if you do, eventually you're going to get wiped out, because some oligarch will just decide to use the power and poison you all. And I was going to mention that now with the technology, with gene splitting and the ability to create, just all sorts of weaponized bacteria and viruses, supposedly, we have to be more demanding than ever for informed consent. It's easy to imagine the coronavirus striking, few thousand deaths in a week, and it's accelerating according to the news reports. And then incredibly, they have a miracle vaccine. Never been tested, of course, but the public will just be clamoring for it. And everyone will roll up their sleeve and get the jab. And then, of course, I would point out that it would then be possible a month later or something, you'd find out that, oh my gosh, we made a mistake and you're all doomed because there was something bad in it, or you're going to lose your brain, or you're all sterile. I mean, there's so much technology that they have access to now that you just have to have informed consent. And honestly, Tim, I don't know what exactly that would even mean at this point. Because bear in mind, say there is a batch of this stuff that's tested, does that mean because one lab tests one batch that you can trust all of the vaccinations that are coming with the same label? You see my point? It's just almost impossible for the citizens to have informed consent, particularly in a panic situation. And so you have to have your plan ready ahead of time. Everyone has to, you know, do their best here. But I just think that people should start thinking about it now and not in 2 weeks when the virus is here and is actually starting to spread.
Well, you know, the whole, I guess the whole vaccine paradigm to me is something to be skeptical of or about, because the claims of vaccines about saving lives have always been highly exaggerated, if not completely, you know, completely just false. The history of vaccinations is actually all the way back to Jenner is actually a spreading contagion, not preventing it. But nevertheless, the story has gone out that vaccines have been this revolution in medical technology. It's allowed people to it's freed humanity of childhood illnesses. Although such things like scarlet fever, these scourges, which were actually done away with through better diet, people no longer had vitamin deficiency, and pretty much the health revolution of the 20th century, which has been attributed to medical technology, was for the most part just an improvement in diet, hygiene, public sanitation. These things are really outside the medical field. Really, I guess you could say farmers and plumbers save more lives than doctors.
Yeah.
So it's one of these claims that are made by the medical profession, the pharmaceutical industry, that I think to give people the belief, and I emphasize the word belief, that these drugs are necessary. You need to be jabbed, you know, a dozen times, a couple dozen times, 30, you know, 3 dozen times in order for you to avoid these illnesses. It's my understanding that why is it, and this is something I think Pasteur himself had doubts or expressed doubts about his germ theory. About the nature of disease itself. What is it? Why is it that sometimes we're asymptomatic and we're symptomatic and some people die, get ill, some people don't, or they don't have it too bad? Now, it all depends on the individual. And so the health of the individual is determined by the strength of his immune system, and that can be addressed through diet and other means other than, you know, pharmacology. And but you don't have to be jabbed with something. There's reasons to be very skeptical because these vaccines are mass produced, of course, and then you have to trust about not only whether they work as advertised, but also what happens to fall into the vial as they're manufacturing these things. Who can you trust? And do you trust the CDC, the National Institute of Health? The CDC has been caught in all types of scandals, you know, revolving doors, covering up the link between MMR and autism. Dr. Thompson, I think, was the one a few years ago exposed that. Yeah. Not to mention just the how lucrative it can be, because I forget which scare it was. Was it the back in the
SARS?
SARS, where yep. It was in Europe at least, they were caught issuing an alert just so they could sell a bunch of vaccines.
Right.
Right. So it's one, you know, so it's big pharma, it's big money, and not to mention, yeah, the psychological warfare aspect of it. You can create a scare and get people to line up to get jabbed. To me, the whole thing is the notion, you know, that we have to be constantly taking these drugs, being injected to maintain our health, I think is a mistaken. It's a false paradigm that's been created.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, I would underline everything you said and just give my opinion for what it's worth, that I don't think vaccines have ever worked, period, frankly. I know there are some instances where people claim they have, and I've tried to study this, and I just, at this point, I think overwhelmingly they do nothing or make you sick. And if there is a few instances where they've protected people, it has really yet to be proven. So there's just no way the risk of taking this thing just on the medical level. But then you go to the fact of what this opens up for the oligarchs that control our society.
Well, Jonas Salk, the one who the creator of the initial polio vaccine, talked about population reduction.
Yeah, for example.
So I mean, so that's his moral outlook. And of course, when you talked about, you know, weeks later or months later after everyone takes, you know, this vaccine, you find we rushed it out, we didn't check, and there are some bad things in this. That kind of occurred, from what I understand, that may very well could have occurred with the polio vaccine when it was tainted with the simian virus.
Yeah, and then they cover everything up because they can't. When you look at the efficacy of vaccines, when you go to like Suzanne Humphrey's graphs, for example, where she has the 55 plates that chart the trajectory of decline in mortality, and you can see where the vaccine was introduced, and you can see that disease after disease after disease, there's no change in the trajectory of the decline in mortality at the point that the vaccine is introduced. Then, you know, the question is, well, why in the hell does the government then insist upon these mandates, right, for school children? I think, can't they read the graphs? Yeah. And this is the part that, you know, I become worried about, because this suggests that they are basically incrementally making us basically accepting of vaccinations and mandatory vaccinations. So that there isn't a conscious resistance to it at a certain point in time in the future. In other words, they're setting up the power. All of this vaccinations for all of this time, it mind controls the public into the belief that the vaccines are good and safe, and we just lose that a lot or a large fraction of the population just loses any skepticism about them. And this is been done, in my opinion, deliberately. And because we know that malfeasance has set up shop inside the government, right? This is post 9/11, and we know that, you know, kerosene doesn't melt steel, you know, so we know that there's an evil secret society that is lurking, you know, and controlling our government. So the idea of this power being given to them, I mean, to me, it's just a question of time.
These are the same professionals, experts that tell you should give hepatitis B shots to infants.
Very same ones, Jim.
That makes no sense. It was a time pregnant women were told to avoid vaccinations. Now they're not. What changed? Nothing changed, because then it was bad for the unborn child. They're not following the rules that they laid. You know, their own rules. They change them, and then you still don't question the authority on this.
Right.
The mortality rates plummeted before the introduction of the vaccines. It had to do with better diet, hygiene, public sanitation, health of the public. And that what is it also the whole issue of disease itself, they, instead of addressing other issues like tainted food or denatured food or processed food or industrial agriculture and hormone laden beef and mass society and
fluoride in the water.
Tainted water, fluoride. You know, all these things that can cause long term illnesses, inflammatory diseases, these things which cause all types of illnesses, symptoms at least. They just say, no, take a drug. Take this anti inflammatory, take a drug, and get a vaccine shot. And you're much better off promoting, you know, policies that promote better health, better diet. And there isn't going to be a miracle drug, but the miracle drug has been a meme that's been pushed by the Rockefeller medicine crowd since the early 20th century with movies and stuff. So there'll be a drug that comes in and saves you, you know, cures you and these things. And
yeah, we have to remember that the original Rockefeller was literally a snake oil salesman, so he was selling miracle drugs even before the oil wealth.
Nujol, oil.
This is just the family's background. I just wanted to at least finish, you know, my thoughts on this with my position on herd immunity. This is being used, and I'm sure it's going to get rolled out when the vaccine for corona is being, you know, forced out to the public. Herd immunity is a concept that was invented by basically a doctor who observed children and the reactions to measles as a group in, I think, Baltimore and in Chicago. His name was, I think it was Hedworth, I believe, Charles Hedworth. And so he said that after 65%, that was the number he came up with, of children had come down with it, the remaining 35% wouldn't really get it. The disease would slow down dramatically. And this is because you can just see mechanically, it's harder to pass the disease when more than 50% are immune, right? Mm-hmm. So then herd immunity became kind of a way to basically shame people into getting their kids vaccinated. In the last five or 6 years, particularly in California, they use it whenever anyone wants to opt out of the mandatory vaccination schedule for the public schools. And I just wanted to note that this also speaks of malfeasance to me, because herd immunity is obtainable when you have a wild virus and you have a natural immune system response to it. Mm-hmm. In other words, the immune system response is 100% and it is lifetime, typically. Yeah. This would be normal response. Now, that provides basically a kind of herd immunity for the 35% who didn't get them, even though I will back up and just point out that the theory has never been tested, even in the best case, the natural case, and no one knows for certain that this 35% doesn't have some other kind of resistance to the disease in the first place, which made them the ones that didn't get it. So mm-hmm. No one really knows exactly how it works. But what we do know is that CDC said that they wanted to create the same herd immunity. And this, I think they started doing it in the 80s and 90s. And they said, we just got to do 65% of vaccinations in these groups to measles, and measles will go away. And then they found that that didn't work. So, well, they went to 70, 75, 80, 85. Now it's 95%, right? And there still is no herd immunity. And this is because the vaccinations don't have the same lasting power and don't have the same efficacy of a natural immune system response to a wild virus. They just will never, at least they've never been developed one that is as powerful and as long lasting. And so the problem is, it's just arithmetical. You just can't get enough vaccination or disease resistance power through the vaccinations to get to the 65% response that natural immune system creates. Just can't do it. It isn't in the vaccination power to get to that point. Even though at 95%, you can see that the concept of herd immunity is just ludicrous. I mean, there's something wrong with the whole analytic and because you're talking about, we've got to vaccinate 95% to like protect these 5%. Well, this isn't even, you're just in an absurd, area. So the thing is that when herd immunity is given to people in the next couple months as a way to shame them into taking, if they do come up with a whiz-bang untested vaccination, I would just hope people would do research into the original paper. Well,
It seems to me that they're trying to get rid of the chance of a alternative sample crowd. So you could say, well, they're not getting, like the Amish.
Exactly right. Yeah. This is why they want the 1% to go away that don't get vaccinated.
Yeah.
Because they're afraid that people will realize that this group is healthier. I think the malfeasance is absolutely transparent. To me, that's just my opinion, but it is absolutely transparent that the reason that they have to get rid of all of the unvaccinated is because that group will be healthier.
Well, humans are born with an immune system that's designed to cope with the world. And if they're healthy and the baby is exposed to mother's breast milk, the baby gets the mother's immune system, who has an entire life, or an adult, 20, 25 years of interacting with diseases that she passes along to her child. And so there's that. Now, if everyone's getting inoculated or getting vaccines and they're not experiencing these diseases naturally, the baby's not going to get the benefit of that immunity from the mother's breast milk anymore, at least not as much. That coupled with the fact that we're living in a world where so many, in the West, where women are told to work and they can't breastfeed. We for decades, the experts told people to bottle feed.
Yeah.
What effect did that have on the immune system of babies? What was ever in the formula also being denied mother's breast milk? So what about that? But there's no accountability for that. The way we get diseases, the way we interact with viruses and bacteria, and whatever its true nature is, is we experience it through our intermediary system, our ear, nose, and throat, our respiratory system. This is why we have respiratory diseases. And they're so annoying because we're confronting that disease and our respiratory system isn't going into our internal organs. So that's a good thing. And then from that experience, you develop an immunity from that disease and you're stronger. Some people say that when you have measles and chickenpox, you develop cellular immunity and you're less likely to develop cancer in adult life. Yeah. You might want to think about that when you've had all these vaccines and now you have a high rate of cancer in the younger people. Now, because I mentioned the simian virus SV40 that was tainted the polio vaccine, which many people think created the soft tissue cancer epidemic of the 20, 30 years later. But really, when you get a vaccine and you get a shot, you're not interacting with a virus in a way that you would naturally do it through your intermediary system. They're injecting it directly into the muscle tissue. It's not a natural way to interact with that.
Of course, and this just shows how the whole idea of herd immunity through vaccinations is, I think it's just malfeasance. It's sort of like Peter, what's his name, Rachel's father, claiming that autism could be a genetic disorder when it didn't exist before 1940.
Yeah.
Peter Hogan. This is just so.
And then shutting down debate, refusing to debate people.
Right, I know. Yeah, well, of course not, because he can't defend these positions, so he just wants to get the propaganda out. The fact is, as I have done my research as best I can, and hoping that others will do theirs, but it looks like the vaccinations actually reduce herd immunity. In other words, if you have 95% of people vaccinated, you're more likely to have an epidemic because they have lost, all those individuals have lost basically the strength of the natural immune system's response. They have a weak immune system response caused by the vaccination. They don't have the real one, you see. And then when the herd has fewer and fewer people in it that have the 100% natural human immune system response to prevent diseases, the whole group now becomes weaker. You see the point? So, mm-hmm. so this is just, I just hope that
it the swine flu in the 70s? Actually, the vaccine killed more people than the swine flu.
Sure, The statistics on the flu vaccine are hilarious. If you've ever seen any of some of the exposés on it, that more people get sick from the vaccine than catch the flu.
Yeah, some of them develop neurological disorders from it.
You get all kinds of problems from the darn thing, but the public just walks in and accepts the jab. I know people that are like they're worried they haven't got the flu shot yet. It's like, well, have you actually studied what response the vaccine can give to you? And they just don't. However, just based on my little sample size here through my connection to the internet, I think this is changing. I do think more and more people are starting to wonder about this.
This is why they're trying to make it mandatory.
And that's why it's mandatory. And that's why, it's funny. I had a discussion this morning with this heroic woman, and we were wondering if, because she has, a lot of interaction with the public on this subject. And she was conjecturing that, there's so much increase in concern about this, that she was wondering if the government's just kind of basically panicked and released the coronavirus because they knew they only have like another year or so to get something like this out there to reduce population and dumb us down. Mm-hmm. It's an idea. It's possible that the effect of the alt media, I think, is they are, you know, obviously troubled by it. You can see in the Google algorithm censorship, you know, how hard they're trying to get people's thinking back as they want to control it. But I don't think they can put it back in the box. I have never met anyone who was skeptical of the propaganda and then lost that skepticism because they experienced like a few days of Google censorship. Everyone knows perfectly well the censorship is there and they just, you know, deal with it. But it doesn't, I don't think the censorship at this point can help. And so that's why the timing of the coronavirus is troubling to me. It doesn't seem, you know, like a natural sort of event. And then, of course, the nature of the disease is very suspicious because they're saying, well, there is no natural immune system response to it. You can get reinfected. Well, wait a second.
I don't buy that.
Right. How is that possible? You know, that there is, but they're actually making the claim. You read it over and over again that this is a very terrible virus, and even if you don't have a response, doesn't mean you won't get sick next year because this thing comes back and your immune system can't find a way to fight. That's what they're claiming. It was interesting, and we talked before we started the show. We were talking that I don't know if you've seen them, but there's some YouTube interviews on YouTube with people or Europeans who were on the cruise ship. English speaker. And it's interesting that they said, yeah, we tested positive. And they asked them, well, you know, how did you feel about the disease? And they said, well, I didn't get sick. I'd never even noticed it.
Yeah.
And the question is like, really, you know, the ethnic specificity is unclear. Is this a disease that will have a real high mortality rate among the Chinese? That is possible. I mean, you know, we've talked about the PNAC crowd who discussed an ethnic specific bioweapon. This was back in 1999. Mm-hmm. They were talking about this. So of course it's on their mind. And then moreover in Wuhan, it's the most polluted city in China. There was,
well, that's another thing. There's no one, I mean, you don't see talked about is just the diet and the pollution, the toxins these people are exposed to. And what's their overall health and what's the state of their immune system?
I don't know. Do you ever read John Rappaport? He was saying that, you know, he's debunked a lot of the scare tactics with the epidemics. And he was pointing out that, you know, there is so much pneumonia in Wuhan because of the toxic air. It's like he didn't actually say this, but to paraphrase, he was saying like, well, how would they even know if they had a pneumonia epidemic? I mean, everyone's got pneumonia.
Well, we've heard about the pollution in China, especially in the industrial areas. In how it's difficult to breathe. Well, that's going to aggravate this thing.
Yeah, and they rolled out 5G, like I was it like 30 days before the epidemic began. So again, that's just, these are red flags. None of this would make me want to go out and let the government get underneath my skin with, you know, a chemical that I have no idea what's in it. You see what I mean? It's just the whole thing is, look, you know, I mean, it's scary. But I'm sorry, I'm just going to try to get my immune system in the best shape I can, and we'll see how I do. No vaccination for me unless I'm on a gurney, strapped down and you know, unconscious, because I'm going to be fighting the whole way.
Well, like I said, they want to go with that. The whole herd immunity excuse is to prevent people who don't want to get it. Then if those people don't get sick, they don't want to have those counterexamples around.
Particularly when everyone's getting sick from the vaccine.
Yeah. Yeah,
and they can make the case that, well, you know, this was absolutely necessary, and the death count would be, you know, 80% or some magic number, you know, if we didn't have the vaccine out there, when they have like say 5% that didn't get vaccinated and they're completely healthy. Mm-hmm. This would literally rip the whole thing apart. So that's why I'm afraid it's going to be mandatory. I think if I'm correct, and this is a project, which, you know, I'm worried that it might be, but I think it's a reasonable chance. There's no way they're going to let people opt out, right? I mean, how could they? Because if that group was then the healthiest group, it would just shatter the whole, you know, illusion about vaccination.
Well, I have no confidence in public health authorities because of the reasons that we've stated. Again, the whole vaccine paradigm is questionable, to say the least. You know, why would you listen to them, you know, on this particular matter, or have any trust, you know?
Right. Yeah, so that's I think that would be kind of my position too. This isn't the moment when I'm going to suddenly go, gee, I really think I want to start trusting Peter Hotez, the CDC, and Merck. You know, I think I'll keep my skepticism intact here and kind of figure if I can find a way to have the immune system worked out. But, you know, it'll be interesting. One thing that here in California, which is, you know, completely insane, there's already talk about basically prepping. I mean, this is actually in the newspapers. Mm-hmm. There's Welsh, you know, is it a good idea to get food stocked up? And they're looking at the model of the Chinese city getting shut down. Rappaport mentioned this. He said, you know, they've shut these cities in China down. He said this could be kind of a mind control to get the West prepared for it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that we have to do the same thing to control the virus, which means, you know, people are just told to stay in their houses and wait it out, which incidentally, which, you know, seems like a paranoid thought. However, I was reading like this afternoon in Italy, I think they have one case, perhaps two or something, you know, very, very, very small number of fatalities, but they've evidently claimed that they have a death. Health officials are inviting people to stay at home.
Well, how many people die of the flu every year?
Well, I mean, in Wuhan,
40,000 or something in America?
I mean, the place is completely toxic, you know, the Chinese place. But in the U.S., yeah, there's thousands of people. People die, well, basically everybody dies. So there's some cost of it that will occur every year. And the flu is one of the major causes, particularly in older people. Just as an example, we had evacuations in my community because of the debris flow 2.5 years ago. You know, we had the whole community was just wiped out. You know, we had boulders in the street, mud everywhere. It was a lot of fatalities. And all of the retirement homes had to get there in the area, had to relocate their populations. And the one that I'm familiar with, because my mother is there, it would have on average of like 3 or 4 fatalities a month. It's fairly large, you know, facility. But when they repopulated them in that for that 30, 40 days, they had like 15 or 16. It was like 4 times the amount. Mm-hmm. And it was flu, you know, that they picked up, or cold, respiratory problems, you know.
Yeah.
So this is just, and it was because they were stressed. But the fact is that, you know, people will die and elderly people are closer and typical.
Well, what you're saying is the environment, these people's environment changed. They were under stress. They were tired. And so it wasn't a new virulent form or some sort of flu. It was they were stressed and they died.
Exactly.
They succumbed. And that's why you have to look at, you know, what's life? What are the lifestyles like in Wuhan and some of these Asian cities? And is it applicable to the West? And these things, you know, before you go, you know, before you start talking about meeting with generals and talking about mandatory vaccines, the efficacy of which is something of a dispute. There's a debate there, which they appear determined to suppress. I mean, Pinterest took down people's anti-vaccine imaging.
Sure.
And why would something as allegedly something as politically neutral as Pinterest do that? Now, this isn't a matter of legitimate debate. Not just vaccine itself, but what type of vaccine and how frequent these things, you know.
Let me ask a question. What do you think is going to happen if they say there is like a, you know, it's an epidemic in the United States and they're claiming that, you know, 1 million people are sick and the mortality rate is 5%, you know, and mm-hmm. everyone should be afraid of this. But thank God, Merck has developed an incredible, miraculous vaccine, and we're mandating the entire population have it. And we have to do it because of herd immunity.
Yeah.
What do you think the population will do? I mean, will there be any resistance to that at all?
Well, I think you would break down the what percentage of the population believes in vaccines and what doesn't now. Maybe break down along those lines. Because once you get a, you know, if you have a vaccine damaged child, or you know someone who's vaccine damaged, or just look at their, you're familiar with the problem, you know, the explodes the autism rate, and it's likely linked to the increase in vaccinations in the last 20, 30 years. You know, why would you even accept that paradigm?
Yeah.
You know, my response would be try to be as healthy and get enough rest and eat as much as, you know, eat properly. And, you know, if the people who are already weak and have, you know, weak immune systems, they're going to succumb to it. The people who are stronger, healthy are going to live, you know, given normal circumstances. But, you know, even like when you had the Spanish flu outbreak in 1918 and 1919, you had very unique circumstances. You had the First World War that was going on.
Yeah, and of course that's very suspicious as a flu because it came from a military installation where
Texas, experiments. Yeah.
Yeah, so this was.
But I mean, you can't look at the death rate among, you know, troops in the trenches and like, well, gee, I mean, how much stress are they under? It didn't seem to attack young people. Which was different at that time.
It was odd.
Yeah, I understand, it came and went without any vaccines. So.
It did indeed, and it disappeared.
The
following season, there was almost no incidents because there was true human herd immunity because the people, you know, had there was enough people who had already gotten it and recovered from it. I wanted to pass along, for whatever it's worth, my cure for viral infections: baking soda. I have had just incredible success with this approach. I was told that by, of all things, a doctor, about 10 years ago or something. And basically, it's just a half a teaspoon of baking soda 6 times a day, the first day, 4 times, and then two the following. And
this is the pH balance?
Yeah, what it does is makes your body alkaline, the blood and the surface of the, you know, your stomach and gut lining thing. And it doesn't cure the disease. I mean, you're sick, but what it does is it just makes the effect maybe 1/10 the recovery time is only a couple days instead of like a month. The theory, as it was explained to me, is very elegant. It's just that viruses grow geometrically. Mm-hmm. And this is why the immune system, you know, takes a while to catch up to it, because the virus has had a head start. The immune system doesn't respond very quickly, and the virus gets going, and then you have this huge viral load. You have to get a lot of killer cells organized by the immune system to actually get rid of the virus, and so you could have like a couple weeks of misery. Well, when you do the baking soda, the viruses simply can't replicate as quickly. They don't replicate in alkaline environment as fast, and so what happens is that the viral load doesn't get that big, and the immune system just catches up much faster. And all I can say is I have, and my wife and a number of people I've, you know, introduced the thing to, and I've never seen it fail. But you have to do it immediately. As soon as you notice any symptoms, that's when you start. So
and the opposite of that is would be like sugar, where the sugar intake is so high in the West, particularly since the Second World War, and that is, I think, a large part of the increased cancer rates.
100%. And, you know, the thing is, you've got to stop eating sugar, incidentally, and flour. And,
I mean, for years, they said, get the fat out of food, and they compensated the lack of food fat with sugar.
Yeah.
Right? Remember that?
Yeah.
Fat-free yogurt, you know.
They're always trying to help, Tim. They're always there to help us, you know, and isn't it great?
Eat pasta and bread, stay away from meat and eggs.
Yeah. You know. Look, it's a generation of obesity, and, you know, that's something that's really terrifying.
Well, they don't look at that. Look, I mean, if you look at we have these virus, let's say the virus killed 25,000 Americans. It got America and killed 25,000 Americans this year, which still be, I think, less than people die from the flu every year. But let's say that would get everyone's attention, because that would create hysteria, particularly with the media. But no one takes into account the consequences or costs, the hidden cost of perhaps of vaccines, because of the illnesses or the complications that they create, like inflammatory disorders. Because, you know, with the adjuvants they put in these things, it causes immunological response, inflammation. The inflammation causes all types of health problems, which the doctors don't relate back or originally back to the vaccines. They say, well, these chronic health disease. Now we have this chronic health problems with even the young Americans, related to diet and also inflammatory disorders are related back to the processed foods we eat, perhaps the vaccines that people taking, because there's the stuff they put in those things are there to stimulate an immune response. And the autoimmune disorders that have increased. You know, am I being paranoid to think maybe that's something to do with the adjuvants that people are taking they're being poked with? I mean, these agents that are being injected directly into their muscle tissue. But see, no one correlates that or connects that to vaccines. These are just health problems.
If you did a study of the, in your theoretical example of 25,000 dead, mm-hmm. I would love to see a real scientific study of what was the basic health of those 25,000. Because I betcha you would find obesity, diabetes, opium addiction. I mean, you'd find glyphosate bellies. You know, these people would probably be on death's door already.
Basically. And the Amish, there'd be no deaths among the Amish.
Right. Exactly. I mean, that would be my guess. And so, it's a good time. This would be a good time to get healthy, you know, and to stop with the sugar, stop with the processed foods. If you can, just eat organic. I know it's expensive and it's almost impossible to do for some people because where they live. But if you can, try to get there because this is the time you really want to be strong.
It's less expensive than dying young or dying of, you know, having chronic disease. But the thing is, these things are all, the cost of these things are dispersed to the insurance system, right?
No complaints.
Because there's a moral hazard there. They don't see it. It's dispersed. So, you know, the healthy subsidize the sick and these things. But I've mentioned this before, is if you look at the how much people spend a year on sugar-laden soft drinks and what they spend on, say, vegetables, particularly, locally grown organic vegetables. And if you just switch those two, you'd solve much of the country's health problems. And you probably solve a lot more because those people who stop drinking, stop eating junk food, drinking soda, habitually, and start eating healthy foods, they wouldn't get contract death, they wouldn't have the long-term health problems. They wouldn't get contract other diseases, you know.
Just as an example, anecdotal, but I picked up a friend of ours at the Samson Cancer Clinic a couple of weeks ago. She had breast cancer, and this was her first single person. And so we were going to, you know, take her out to have something to eat and just to commiserate, you know, because she was frightened and things. Mm-hmm. You know, she's a friend of ours. And so we went into this, it's basically a cancer center here in Santa Barbara. Tim, I mean, I'm trying to think, it looked like the scenes in War, Lord of the Rings, where the orcs overwhelm Isengard. I mean, there was hundreds of people with cancer. Mm. There's hundreds. It was just, I could not believe it. And they were in lines, and everyone was just, you know, I mean, I really wonder what the real stats are on this, because I don't think we're getting the actual truth with the data they give us. It just, in this, I know it's a tiny sample size, but it was just overwhelming, the number of people that were there for treatment. And of course, what are the treatments? You know, chemo, radiation. I mean, it's this complete madness, in my opinion.
Yeah, but burn was a burn, cut, and poison. Yeah,
burn, cut, poison. You know, and so that was really shocking to me. And you know, it's funny because couldn't really address what I would see as the real issues in the car driving, you know, to dinner, because, you know, this woman has made the decision to do radiation and is doing it. That's a bad time to start the dialogue. You know, it's sort of like there at that point, you're really, the horse is out of the barn. You have to just be supportive. I mean, that's, I couldn't really think of anything to say, Frank.
She's gotten a diagnosis and the doctor says we give you 6 months without treatment.
And that's exactly right. And the thing, once they've got the cancer identified, it is a process. I mean, it's palliative care, basically, because then it's just everything is mandated by the insurance company and the lawyers. You've got to do this drug, got to do that drug. I mean, she's given a prescription to go down to start the chemotherapy and the radiation right at the point of the diagnosis. And there is no mention the potential for nutrition or any or what the causality is, maybe lifestyle, you want to make changes. She's just told to go down and get the radiation started. That's all. That's medicine in the United States. Anyway, it's just it was it, you know, I knew it was like that, but it was just,
well, I mean,
when it's someone that you
know, whether it's
really upsetting,
whether it's cancer or you know, the fear of pandemics and these things, it's, you have to question the whole medical establishment and the paradigm that it operates under. If you have to study the history of it, you become very skeptical of it. The allopathic, you know, care that was created, because they completely marginalize any homeopathic or naturopath care, which is you know, at least it's consistent with the body, the nature of the body and how it works. And you would think there'd be some sort of integrative regimen created, and there hasn't been. But with something like with cancer, where, you know, decades and decades of funding and research, you go to the grocery store, you want to give it to the Cancer Society when you're buying something, you're constantly, you know, badgered or being urged to give to children's cancer research, you know, and all these things, all these hospitals, these big buildings, billions of dollars invested in capital and equipment. I think the average cancer patient spends $300,000 on their treatment.
Yep.
If some doctors would come and say, well, actually, this is the completely wrong way to go. We've established that you can avoid cancer and actually cure it by doing this at a fraction of cost. No one's going to go for that, and they haven't because of all this investment. And that's, people don't understand that you know, the medical industry is an industry and it's a business model. You know, that's why they have junk food in the cafeteria, because it keeps the hospital open, downstream profits. But no one has studied, you know, if you just read about cancer and the treatment, once you get the diagnosis, it's like we have to give you this radical treatment, else you're going to die. But no one addresses the nature of cancer and why it develops in the first place. You know, why are the cells behaving the way they're? Why they aren't functioning properly? Why are they, you know, rapidly multiplying and they're not, you know, not under they're not being regulated by the cell anymore? Well, a lot of that is, you would think there'd be a lot of research in that. With, is it stress? Is it toxins? I think it's stress and toxins. But to address stress and toxins is to bring into question the entirety of modern life.
So, I mean, the way it's
right?
treated.
I mean, it's,
yeah, I mean, the way it's treated in the hospitals and in the diagnostic offices is that this is just a normal and perfectly natural part of life.
Yeah.
you have
my body's attacked. Yeah. My cell. I'm literally killing myself now. What's going on? You would think what's causing the cell to react the way it is? That it's rapidly, you know, creating. Multiplying, it's out of control. It's not regulated anymore by the DNA of the cell. You know, they don't question that. You know, or they don't. At least they don't address it. You know, the mitochondria somehow isn't getting the right energy to function properly. That's the sort of the engine of the cell. So why is that happening? And you would think there's some sort of oxidative stress or toxins. You know, all the things that modern life, you know, pours, you know, gives to us.
Absolutely, and. The way that the medical profession addresses the phenomena at this point is so automatic, it just creates the impression. This is what, you know, I won't mention her name, but I'm talking to her about how, because I was curious about how it actually, you know, the diagnosis and what's it. I mean, it is as if this is just a normal part of life. You know, you're at this age and there's cancer, but it's also a normal part of life to have radiation. And then it's also a normal part of life when that fails to have chemotherapy. And then it's also a normal part of life to go into hospice and be given Oxycontin until you're dead. This is just the nature of reality. I mean, there is just no questioning. They don't sit down and actually do any kind of process of thought, you know, of like, well, like, really, how did we get here? You know, what is going on? There's none of that. Absolutely zero, as far as I can tell. It's just, there we are. You know, don't worry. Your insurance will pay for everything. Here's your prescriptions. We'll see you in the chemo office in a few months. So that automation is now going to be in play, I'm afraid, in a few months here. It'll be interesting to see what happens when it comes on shore in the U.S. I think it's absolutely inevitable. I don't know, of course, no one does, if there's going to be the same kind of mortality statistics here. If this is a project, of course, there are going to be some sacrificial lambs, right? There's no question there'll be headlines about, you know, staggering death percentages from the virus. If this is designed to put people in their houses and to set up, help set up, you know, the Brave New World police state, you know, for as a concept, mm-hmm. you know, that's actually what's going on here, then, you know, you have to expect drama, you know, Sturm und Drang, because they're going to try to make everyone really frightened. Since it's in the Middle East, I don't know if it's in Israel, but it certainly is in Iran. I've been reading about this. You know, we have the Italian suggestion and invitation for the public to stay home. The next week will be very interesting to see how, if you see cases start popping up in France. And because my point is that since Europe may be a few weeks ahead of us, I think you'll see a pattern established. And so, you know, watch that carefully, because that's going to basically give you the clue as to where we're going to be in a couple of weeks. Mm-hmm. You know, if you start having police states established, as has been the case in China, because let's not kid ourselves, that's exactly the response that they've done. They just ratcheted the freedoms to zero and have created a police state where everyone has to stay inside their homes. I've watched a number of YouTubes of Chinese who are basically incarcerated in their homes during this so-called epidemic, and they are very clear, claiming that this is just the government attempt to establish, you know, a screwed down slave state.
Well, it's a great pretext to go after, you know, dissidents or enemies of the state, and that'll always be used. And even here in the States, in the West, would be a good pretext to go after, you know, dissidents, people who dare to even question, you know, governmental policies.
Not us, because we're pure of spirit and mind, so they're perfectly happy to let.
Well, this goes the whole thing about we'll probably have to talk about our next topic next week, so I spent so much time talking about this.
Yeah, sorry about that.
But this whole idea of modern healthcare, which we did a show a while back on healthcare, how everyone's worried about, you know, how to pay for healthcare, how it should be financed, we have a right to healthcare. But everyone assumes that what do you mean by healthcare? Do you mean, you know, again, the allopathic Rockefeller medicine, or the, you know, or, you know, could you do you have a right to pursue homeopathic or naturopathic care? And again, you're putting complete confidence in the medical establishment, which is a cartel and it's supported by the powers that be. So if you have any doubt about, you know, any skepticism towards, you know, the system or the powers that be, why would you put any faith in authorities on this matter?
I am happy to report that I've had a Medicare card maybe 6 years, mm-hmm. maybe 71 in a couple months. And I've never used it once.
And look at Medicare. It's got a bunch of, you know, look what that's done.
Going for a free checkup. But yeah, I really wanted to have some doctor poke and probe me and then tell me what chemicals I'm missing in my body. You know?
I mean, really, you know, 80 years ago, you know, the elderly, you know, weren't hypochondriacs. Nor were they necessarily, they're a little tired, but they weren't. And feebleness wasn't the norm. And I mean by elder, I'm thinking people, you know, 65 or above. I'm talking about 90. You get to a point where, you know, things start to fall apart. But I'm saying it wasn't associated with that, you know. And now it is, you know.
We've created this whole class of almost, you know, can characterize as semi-humans. I mean, you have to go into Costco and see these poor creatures that are in the electric carts at the the pharmacy counter waiting to pick up their 15 prescriptions.
Yeah.
It is the saddest aspect of human existence I've ever seen in my life. And I mean, there will be, every time I go in there, I always look at it because it's a phenomena that I think it's important to understand. But the obesity, I mean, some of these guys can barely fit in the electric cars.
Well, we look at it, there was a time when there weren't any at stores.
Yeah.
And there are a few now that these larger stores need a fleet of them.
That's right. I mean, they need like traffic cops.
Well, the good symbol for America, this is kind of a photograph that went out. It was this poor individual, obese, in one of those carts extending to get a bag of potato chips, and it had fallen over.
Oh God, it's so pathetic.
And that's America, 2020.
I mean, my picture, I wish I could have one, was a guy who was, you know, obese to an extreme point, a point that was like sad. You couldn't even look at him because he was maybe 400 pounds. And he had pulled up to the counter and was getting drugs, and he was getting 7 prescription bottles. I mean, you can imagine, they just have this guy, you know, blood pressure, blood thinner. Yeah. I mean, he's just taking every Viagra. I mean, just every imaginable chemical that they're pumping in this poor guy. And he's obviously responding with inflammation. I mean, they basically turned him into a semi-human, and his life is a living hell. Because obviously someone like that is just in agony. You know, every
these diseases. People have, I think, they're laboring under misconception, years of propaganda. I still hear so many people talk about AIDS and HIV, right?
Yeah.
You know, if you just look at the evidence, just look at common sense, it wasn't this one virus that was killing these people. These people were wasting away because of the stress they had put on the immune system after years of abuse, drug abuse, you know, bathhouses, physical abuse, just, amphetamine and cocaine fueled orgies and these things. That's going to wipe you out. And it always did. It was these things, the diseases these people were confronted with weren't anything new among that community, among drug addicts and these things. But then they created this HIV thing so they could sell, what's that drug? It was black labeled.
Yeah,
EZT.
Yeah, EZT. They had all AZT.
AZT, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I saw the statistics on the research into the San Francisco bathhouses that had 300 sex partners in a year was the median number. Outliers were up to 600, perhaps.
Remember, they're looking for a vaccine for that?
Yeah, I mean,
you know, here's a doctor, give you advice. Doctor, I'm feeling sick. I have pneumonia. I feel run down all the time. I'm chronically ill. Instead of saying, well, stop going to the bathhouses, eat better, stop taking drugs, see if you can build an immune system up. No, they take this AZT that'll kill you 3 times faster.
Yeah, I mean, because you can continue your lifestyle, go ahead, continue taking amyl nitrate and having 3 sex partners a night.
Yeah.
I mean, this is, you can't even lampoon that concept, you know, it's just absolutely tragic.
Yet this became a whole thing about you could get HIV one time.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. One time is going to get you. So now we have to teach kids teach 7th graders how to perform safe sex.
Safe anal sex with same-sex partners, which of course was, I think, but the thing is that the homosexuality was something that they wanted to introduce into the culture. And even though it was kind of a horror show, they were able to talk about it with this drug. And I was there, of course. This was, late 70s when it was just this, every day there would be a headline. And we were told that it will be broken out into the heterosexual community. Well, it's already done it. It's already there, you know, and there'll be tens of thousands of heterosexuals dying of AIDS in your neighborhood very shortly. We're all in this together. It's kumbaya, the gays, you know, and the drug addicts and the heterosexuals. We're all going to be sharing this multicultural virus. But then it never broke out into the heterosexual community. Why is that? Well, one explanation could be that, well, because there was no virus.
Yes.
It just didn't exist.
Joe, were you saying they lied to us about that?
Gosh, what a concept. I would point out, people are interested in that, go to John Rappaport. I think John will be very popular in the months to come because he has such a background in the mythology of virology, you know, and
remember that mosquito-borne disease that was a few years ago?
Yeah,
it caused encephalitis or something.
It was looking at brain small. They had some fancy name for it. I forget, but it's there's so many diseases. I mean, it's impossible.
Well, they try to blame it on mosquitoes, and that's this excuse to sort of genetically engineer mosquitoes and give you a vaccine. And Bill Gates got in on that. But it turns out, you know, these
like
people there,
or Zika or something.
Zika virus.
And it turns out,
you know, down there, there's like overuse of pesticides. All types of water's polluted. There's all types of vectors for people, for children, for mothers infected with it or tainted with it, to see problems, and not this exotic, you know, or just sort of scary, you know, mosquito thing, but up here causes people ever want to get sprayed for mosquitoes. They're terrified of it.
Yeah. You know. And they damage the population with their toxicity, which they create usually making money. Mm-hmm. And then they blame it on a virus and sell them a drug.
Yeah.
It's a con game, for heaven's sakes. But they to really execute the entire, you know, plan, they have to not just make people sick, but then basically kill them with, you know, all the bad medicine.
Well, a good example of how you can change, you know, people forget the recent past is how they've changed measles and chickenpox from trivial childhood illnesses to something to be terrified of.
Yes.
And that's in my childhood. When I was a child, you just got chickenpox and measles. I was never inoculated for it. I just got it. But this next generation of me were being inoculated for it, which I think is actually a bad thing, because those are the things that you should probably have when you're a kid.
And I had measles and mumps. Yeah. And I'll tell you, Tim, I can go to Disneyland all the many times as I want, and I will never get measles.
But now it's like if there's 30 cases of measles in California, it's national news. Yeah, and usually it's a group of kids who are supposedly immunized for it. But they don't talk about that.
Well, it goes to the herd immunity fantasy, where now they have like some examples where there's 100% vaccination and they still have outbreaks. And this just what they're exposing is the fact that the vaccines aren't effective.
Well, you know, the sock virus, it had to be taken off the market because it is actually paralyzing kids. Yeah, people still think people still think the sock vaccine got rid of polio, and it didn't. They just redefined it. They changed the diagnostic parameters for it.
Yeah. So there's just, it's just a lump of malfeasance, brother. I mean, it's just the Hippocratic Oath has been so totally breached. I mean, it's like the levee around New Orleans after Hurricane Katrina. I mean, there is just nothing left of it. It's just a land rush by people with the medical degrees to make as much money as they can before some of their patients are dead.
Well, I mean, Maurice Hillman?
Yeah.
He was involved in the polio vaccine. And there was a PBS special about called The 20th Century, The Health Revolution. It's a history of, I guess, health and medical advances in the 20th century. And they had an interview with him in that, which they cut out of the documentary. But it was years later, it was released where they're laughing. He's talking about how when they were experimenting with the polio vaccines, how they put in these things. And he laughs about it. The SV40 virus, which people think it causes, it became the source for the soft tissue cancer epidemic of the succeeding decades, the 80s and 90s.
I've seen a few of these videos where you have the research doctors sitting around, and these are typically videos that were taken when they're not aware they're being filmed, or they're had a few drinks or something. Mm-hmm. It's just horrifying. I mean, they're literally laughing at the whole vaccine process and about how, you know, how it's so uncontrollable. I mean, I've seen just so many of those things that I don't need that to make me skeptical, but I have seen that. I mean, I think they actually had Salk once on one of those talking about, I can't remember, my mind slips me, but I forget which one exactly what it was, but it was just horrifying. So look.
Well, even something like polio, which 95% is asymptomatic, and then 90% of those who are symptomatic just have like flu symptoms, and then just the small fraction that suffer the paralysis. And so you even question whether or not the paralysis is caused by the polio virus itself. People think it might be caused by something else, you know,
Well, DDT, because
DDT,
that was when people don't remember this, but I was there. They would just spray school kids with DDT. And I've seen some good research, some pretty good analysis of overlaying the use of DDT with the increase in sudden paralysis. Mm-hmm. You know, was this very sudden paralysis that would occur. And then it declined, also very closely correlated with when they realized they were killing everyone with the DDT. And
isn't the misdirection of DDT is that it caused, you know, like bird eggshells to be thin
Yeah, they had all that nonsense.
So Rachel Carson, Silent Spring, but she didn't talk about. To me, it would be the because obviously it has a neurological effect on mosquitoes.
Yes.
You think it might have a neurological effect on people?
Yeah.
Doesn't it cause paralysis to mosquitoes? That's how it kills them or something?
That's exactly what it does.
So maybe, you know, I don't have a medical degree. I'm not a scientist, but I'm a little, you know.
Well, you know, I mean, I hate to say it, and this is the kind of the where it all leads, is that science has been weaponized. Degrees have been weaponized. This is when you have, I mean, in the post 911 world, you know, where you sit there and stare at the building collapsing, and then the government says that kerosene melted the steel. I mean, you're just in a world where you can't trust the authorities. The authorities, I mean, I'm sure there are many of them that are good and wonderful people, but there's also a controlling element that is just absolutely malevolent and doesn't seem to mind whatsoever in slaughtering its citizens. So you cannot, just because, you know, CDC says, look, we've tested it. I'm sorry. Not now. Not in this environment. You cannot.
They can't test it. Not, remember Bill? Remember that was that? I guess it was that Bill Gates when he's at that. What's that talk?
Yeah, I know. I know.
TED talks. TED talks.
TED talks. Yeah,
and he talks about he's talking about reproductive health.
Yeah,
and he's talking about in the context of vaccines, and he talks about, you know, the if we do our job, we can reduce the birth rate, reduce the population this much.
Yeah.
How's that healthy? How's that generative?
And of course, you always have to put these things in context, yeah. And you have to remember the fact that Gates's father was the head of Planned Parenthood.
No one makes that connection, do they?
Right.
And or so, that Jonas Salk talked about reducing the population through chickens.
Yeah, I know. And of course, Planned Parenthood, and then it goes right back to the Quattro Coronati, yeah, and the Besant. You know, I mean, it's a straight shot of malevolence. And, you know, so.
Well, Jay, you're just anti-science.
I am, actually.
Anti-science in quotes.
Yeah, I mean, put it in quotes because, you know, unfortunately, it's this upside-down world. It's the post-911 world where the citizen just is waking up to the fact that scientism is just something that keeps him impotent and unable to be basically skeptical of people who are using clever techniques to kill him, to weaken him, to basically sterilize him. I mean, all of these different aspects of genocide are being basically force-fed through, you know, covered up with the scientism stuff. But unfortunately, and I know good scientists out there trying hard, you know, they may not be in any kind of control over their science, of course, because if they were, then the universities would actually start, you know, producing things like reports about 911 and the real effects of vaccines and the real relationships between toxicity and us. You'd see some real helping the population. So good scientists may exist, but they don't have any impact, right? But the fact is that as far as my position is that the citizen can't trust any of the scientists.
Well, the scientists that come out and to start talking about these things, they're immediately cut off funding. You know, who was the guy who wrote the book, The Invention of the AIDS Virus, HIV Virus? What's his name?
Rappaport?
No, he's a report. He reports on
it. Yeah.
It was a virologist. What's his book? Inventing the AIDS Virus. And he talks about.
Gosh darn it. I can't bring it up to mind, but I know what we're talking about. Yeah.
But he, ran a lab. Major university. The moment he started talking about this, he was cut off.
Yeah, of course.
So, I mean, Susan Humphreys is another one, right? I mean,
yeah, that's right. And she is you can just listen to her and see what a righteous person she is and a great, brilliant researcher she is. And
Duesenberg, that's right.
Yeah, Duesenberg. Yeah, yeah, that's right. Peter, yeah.
Peter
I just wanted, you know, this was like in context of the subject we'll be getting into next week about, you know, how do you protest? I wanted to give a little example that kind of fits in here. So here in Santa Barbara, we have what's called Science Pub, right? Mm-hmm. It's at this beer bar, Irish pub. And once a month, they have some typically UCSB multiculturalist, you know, scientists will come and give a lecture and there'll be presentations. And my wife and I typically go, right? And so there was some, it was like, forgetting what the topic was, but, you know, at the end, they pass the microphone, you can ask a question. And my question was to the multicultural PhD lady, you know, I think she was a geneticist or something. And I said, you know, I have a question. It is this. Given that, you know, the mortality rate, I mean, excuse me, the longevity rate is in decline, given that there are epidemics of every kind of, you know, toxic related, you know, and I named the disease, you know, like, you know, diabetes, obesity, you know, blah, blah, blah. I said, shouldn't the natural perspective of the citizen be that science has become malevolent? That it's evil? This didn't go over well with the crowd. I'd had a pint, you know, which I don't drink, and it's like, I just couldn't help myself. And I mean, it was
people think you're bad enough sober, Joe.
I know, and I am. I mean, you know, so, but there it was after, like, I didn't have the whole pint, but I had most of it. And I just couldn't help myself. I said, shouldn't we just have this idea that science is malevolent? Isn't that really what we should be? And it was amazing how quiet the place got, you know. She wouldn't even respond, really. She just kind of stared at me. I realized the next morning, you know, I was glad I did it, because it's a kind of protest. Getting the one of the ways we can protest is just to continue to discuss the stuff in public, because they're trying to shut us up. I mean, you just, you know, see the Google algorithms, right? This is all an attempt to censor free speech and critical thinking. You know, this is what they're trying to do. But if we continue to just, you know, not be shut down and continue to talk about it, particularly in public, it's a kind of a protest, and I think it's one that'll help spread the information faster. You know, we talk about the information revolution. The quicker we go, the better, because somewhere out there, there's critical mass. And I don't know how close we are to it, but I think this, as I see it, this project with Corona, that kind of suggests to me that we're cutting a little bit, and they are, you know, accelerating things and getting things going because they are worried about it.
Well, it's the same thing about national security. As it's all part of the scientific dictatorship, we have to defer to the experts, whether it's generals with their medals, or scientists in their white coats and their degrees or their diplomas on the wall framed, is imposing a dictatorship through a class, whether it's a, you know, a military class or a scientific class. And the citizen is not given the information, or isn't given the resources and the ability to question their diktats. And that's what and they can create this through, you know, I look at some of these pandemic fears the same way that when the government reports on terrorism or terrorist threats, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. So anyway, next week we'll talk about how to protest, and are they worthwhile? You know, what do they mean? I think it's actually going to be very timely.
Yeah. So, okay, Joe.
All right, Tim. Thank you so much. Great to hear your voice, and I'll be talking to you next week.
Enjoy your weekend. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye.